The fallout between the West and Russia over Ukraine continues. After a powerful speech by the Russian president to Russian lawmakers congratulating Crimea on the referendum and signing the treaty immediately after that, including Sevastopol, Russia announced one of the inevitable consequences, that it will boost its military presence in Crimea to protect against what they called external threats. Meanwhile, the sanctions regime by the West was turned up a notch, both by the U.S. and the EU, in which Russia has hit back. The U.S. cleared the way for possible sanctions on key sectors of the Russian economy, while Russia imposed entry ban on American lawmakers. Is the Cold War officially on? Well, we're going to ask that question from our guests. Let me introduce them. Editor of MediaChannel.org, Danny Schechter, joins us from New York. And from the Center for American Progress, Lawrence Korb joins us from Washington. Gentlemen, welcome. Danny Schechter, I'll start with you. A simple question. Hello, Cold War?
Well, certainly there's a mounting tension between the two countries. Not exactly a replay of the Cold War, but you know, there's a lot of interdependence here. There's a lot of mutual financial interests at play. And so, there's a web of relationships that didn't exist during the Cold War. But it seems as if there is a growing polarization between lawmakers and the President of the United States and European officials and the Russian president. And that can't be a good thing for world cooperation and peace.
Well, let's find out more about where this is going, Lawrence Korb. I don't know if you can maybe spell this out for us, because obviously there's no doubt that this feud is going to go on for some time, I would think. And on sanctions, you know, the further sanctions as announced by both the EU and the U.S., this time the U.S. sanctioning key sectors of the Russian economy, which we have reports indicating Bank Russia, $10 billion in assets, is one of the banks, or the bank that the U.S. president said. And, of course, Russia hitting back with an entry ban on American lawmakers. Can you run us through how far and deep this is going to go?
Well, I think basically it depends on the Russians. If they don't try to move forces into East Ukraine or something like that, I think what you're going to see is an economic sanctions like this, or maybe even tightening them, some trade restrictions. We know that the G8 meeting, which was supposed to be in Sochi, none of the other countries other than Russia, you know, want to do it. So I think it really depends on Russia. The sanctions that they put on now are for basically violating the Budapest Memorandum of 1994, in which they, along with the United States and the United Kingdom, agreed to basically, if Ukraine took its nuclear weapons out, that they would guarantee the territorial integrity of Ukraine.
You know, this Budapest Memorandum does come into play based on some other analysts mentioning it there, Lawrence Korb. Of course, it wasn't legally binding, but what about the agreement that was signed on February 21st? That was binding. What happened?
Well, basically, what happened was that the people in Ukraine, they were not pushed by the West or anything, or Europe, were not very happy when they found out the stuff that Yanukovych was doing and the corruption and the lifestyle that he lived. So they rose up, and that's basically what happened. It had nothing to do with any outside interference.
Danny Schechter, I'm going to go back to the economics of this, because we're looking at this trend probably continuing. And when you look down, well, I'm looking down on this list of the exports from Ukraine in terms of the business that Russia does, not only with Ukraine, but also from the EU. That's in the billions of dollars, hundreds of billions from what I'm looking at. And then I'm looking at the last line here, which indicates how much business the U.S. does with Ukraine. And that only amounts to $2 billion. So who's losing more here, the EU or the U.S.?
Well, you know, as you know, as an Iranian, sanctions can be a double-edged sword. You can impose sanctions, but you can also, in the course of imposing sanctions, unite the people against your policies, which is part of what has happened there. So sanctions are not, they're a blunt instrument. They're not necessarily a strategic instrument. And the problem is the lack of negotiations, the lack of proposals for resolving the conflict. seems to be deafening. What we have is more and more sanctions, but less and less, fewer and fewer initiatives to try to accommodate the differences that exist there. There's this litany on the U.S. side and the Western side, we're right, you're wrong, and that's being responded to on the Russian side by something very similar. So that leads to a confrontation and a stalemate, it seems to me. Russia is in Crimea, has been in Crimea. Crimea feels a kinship with Russia, it seems, even if you discount some of the election as being not exactly free and fair and full, because there were no real time to campaign, explain the issues back and forth. You still have a situation on the ground there which is polarizing and is dangerous, in my opinion, and I think the opinion of a lot of people. I just read a call by the opposition leader in the German parliament for negotiations, criticizing Western policy as being, self-defeating.
Well, Lawrence Korp, self-defeating is what I'm going to bring here into the picture with my next question to you, because what the U.S. president said, and this is kind of like how it treated Iran, it said that, the world economy may even suffer based on the sanctions that we're going to impose on Russia. And then there's lots of speculation now that this could even lead to an economic meltdown with these with the sanctions that the U.S. is placing. I mean, is Barack Obama going with a knee-jerk reaction here, making the world suffer in terms of certain economies, particularly the ones in Europe, by approaching Russia in this form and fashion?
Well, I think it's important. They did try, and again, even before the sanctions, they tried to negotiate. Secretary of State John Kerry went to London last weekend to talk to the Russian foreign minister to negotiate. So I don't think negotiations have been off the table. President Obama has called President Putin at least twice. Chancellor Merkel has called. The key here is not the U.S. The European Union does 10 times more business with the Russians than the United States does. And the fact that they're moving in this direction shows how seriously they take it, because there will be more of an economic impact on them. We haven't even mentioned the whole question of, energy from Russia going through Ukraine to the to Europe.
Well, we're going to talk about that perhaps a little bit later. Right now, it's a good time to take a quick look at some of the comments that were made on our Facebook page on the topic Ukraine.
Hilarious. They invade a country. None reacts. Russia protects its people from a country, and that part asks to be annexed and join Russia. All goes crazy. What leaders? Mr. Van Rompuy or Barroso? I don't know who they are, and nor did Europe vote for them. They are not the leaders of Europe. They unelected, unknown bankers posing as leaders. Hope they realize most of Europe is backing Russia on this. They say the EU is falling apart. Well, let Van Rompuy and his fellow puppets finish the job and make a total fool of themselves. Now turn off the gas and oil supplies to those countries that have put sanctions against Russia. Why aren't they going to touch Russia even when all Europe has been together? They can show their power only to powerless nations like Palestine, Libya, Afghanistan, and so on. Cowards.
Just some of the viewer comments there. Danny Schechter, let's move on to this threat that has been leveled now against Russia. I should say a warning by the Ukrainian envoy, who said Moscow is eyeing a full-blown intervention in the east and the south, preparing for a large-scale assault in the southern and eastern parts. Do you buy that? Do you think that's what Russia wants, even though the Russian president said that he doesn't want Ukraine to be divided?
Well, they're saying no. Sometimes they say no and do yes. So you can't fully know, but it doesn't seem it's in their interest to escalate this further. They've already achieved, in a sense, their goal of neutralizing this sense of American triumphalism about what was happening in the Ukraine. And I'm sure that Larry Korb is very well aware of the money put into Ukraine covertly and overtly by American agencies like the NED, the support for groups that, you know, are fascist or fascist leaning in Ukraine. You can't just dismiss all of that. Even Foreign Policy magazine, which has been very critical of Putin, acknowledges this, says, look, the actual government, the unelected government of Ukraine, is nothing to write home about. In fact, it has a lot of serious cleavages, and there are bully boys, you know, in it right now, as well as a number of oligarchs. So this is hardly a model of democracy against some extremism on the other side. It seems as if all sides have more similarities than differences. I don't know what you think, Mr. Korb.
Mr. Korb?
Well, basically, Ukraine is it was in terrible shape. It was not governed well. There was a lot of corruption, as we saw with Yanukovych and his allies. And I think what's happening is the United States and the West are now pledging economic assistance to it. I mean, President Obama has said no military option. You know, in other words, he's taken it off the table, which to a certain extent weakens, you know, the leverage of the West. And they're going to be providing economic aid, the European Union, the United States, the International Monetary Fund is going to, you know, is going to do that. And that's the thing. And for the long run, for the Ukrainian people, the country, you're right, was in terrible, terrible shape. But it had nothing to do with the West was not making this happen. It was, you know, as a result of the people running the country.
Well, as we were speaking, there was an important
piece of
news. But
one of the things that the
Ukraine...
Go ahead,
Danny Schechter. I'm sorry.
Let me,
go ahead.
Follow up. May I, please?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Let me just follow up here, because it seems as if one of the big debts that the Ukraine has run up has been in gas and oil payments to Russia that they are well in arrears for. In the New York Times today, there's a letter to the editor using the term debt forgiveness, you know, that Russia should forgive the debts that the Ukraine owes to them. So, you know, obviously, the deals with the oligarchs there were made not just